Okay, you guys, we're going to roll it. But we want to find out from you guys who's in the room. It's going to be maybe a little tough, so could we start up in the front row here? Maybe we could start with Cammie.
Yeah.
This is Cammie. She's from Denmark, and she's an intern here with CCB. And then... And then the next person sitting next to her is?
Lisa Gordon, Sacramento.
Great. And next? What? Who?
Alice McGrath from San Mateo, Palo Alto.
Great.
Bob Turner, Northern California.
Okay.
Landa Falan from the state of Hawaii.
Wow. Hey.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Okay.
I don't know
if
Linda Johnson.
Dan Jackson.
Okay.
To the back. No, I'm tapping people as if that would be.
Okay, that's fantastic. Thanks. Okay.
Dan Jackson. Ed Preston.
Christy Preston. Ruby Andrew from the state of California and Sisters
Heights.
Uh huh. Amanda Winkler from Riverside.
Uh huh.
California.
All right.
Dan Kaiser, former CCB employee, now looking for major rehab.
Okay.
Margaret Bethlehem Garcia from Mercedes, Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
Jan Carmichael with the Fresno District here and also with the Department of Rehabilitation in Fresno.
Oh. Great, hi, yeah.
San Francisco.
Liz Klein from San Francisco.
Great.
Brittany from San Francisco.
Yay.
Linda Correll.
Yay.
Richard Retta from Fremont, Union City.
Great.
Are you from here from Santa Maria, California?
Good. Great. Okay, Ed.
Stephanie Root from Northridge, California.
Roger Hood, Fresno, California.
Uh-huh.
Hi, Roger. Welcome.
Suzanne Hood,
Native President. Speak up, folks.
Can you say your name real loud?
Yeah.
Oh, Bennett, hi.
Bennett.
Hey.
Nice to see you.
Yeah. Good.
Asha Wynn from Long Beach, California.
Robert Wynn, Long Beach, California.
Bonnie Reddy, Orange County.
Parker St. Dennis. Victor Valley.
Mm-hmm. Rob Hovery, Victor Valley. Hi, Heather.
Hey, Jesse. Linda Johnson from San Mateo.
Hey, Linda.
Hey.
David Jokers from New Mexico.
Is that it, Ed?
That's it.
And oh, great. Looks like we got a few new people walked in. I saw something moving in the back. Let's hope that's new people.
It's just your audio girl.
Oh, okay. Rats? No, that's not rats. It's yay. Yay.
Are very important.
Yes.
Two of us up front.
What? Oh, yes. Okay, great.
Ken Metz from San Gabriel, but Greater LA chapter.
Uh-huh.
And Donna Pomerantz, Pasadena, California, San Gabriel Valley chapter.
All righty. Yay, this is good. Okay, you guys, I'm going to introduce Jessie here in a minute. And we have the audio lady. We have to make sure we announce her, too. She's important to us.
Yay.
What's your name?
Teresa. And we got a new assistant this year, convention, and hopefully I get to keep him and he's not going to run away from me. It's Jared. He's going to be a big help. He knows what he's doing. So he's
hey, Jared.
Our new hand that's around. So Nick and Phil, welcome. You guys are making me so welcome.
Hey.
Oh, I'm tired of training new assistants.
I'm going to introduce Jesse here in a second. I just want to welcome everybody here to the rehab committee. We promised to make this a very exciting day for you. Jesse's an excellent speaker to speak on the topics of Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and all those things that are about social networking. we were expecting our entire line of authority from rehab here, and they're not here in the room. They're here at the convention, and I'm feeling a little sad that they're not in the room with us. But
still meeting, probably.
Well, this is kind of an important meeting, the rehab committee. You'd think they'd want to join in with us and work with us that way. Why bother coming? If, you know. Okay. Anyway. Hopefully they will join in a little bit. We are expecting not only Jesse speaking today, but also Jim Armstrong to speak at 2:15. And he will be speaking on the Title VII program at the Department of Rehabilitation, which is an independent living program. It has been increased funding in that program, and it's for people 55 and older to use. And it goes out to the community agencies to provide the services for independent living to those people that can utilize that program. That, because the money hasn't increased, we'd really like to hear more about how this is helping people. What else is there today? We are going to talk about a survey being done regarding a commission for the blind. Right now we have a division for the blind. And because there are so many problems inside the Department of Rehab and the division for the blind, people are starting to look outside to another answer. So we're going to talk about ways that people can be more proactive inside rehab, and I was hoping we'd have the staff to work with us on that today, but hopefully they'll show up later. Okay, so I'm going to introduce to you Jesse Lorenz. Jesse works at the Lighthouse in San Francisco. What's your position there?
Director of Public Policy.
She's the Director of Public Policy, and she is fantastic with technology, really brilliant. And for many of us that are blind, that are scared of technology and are not really fitting into the world and not using these techniques like Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, it'll be good for us to learn more about how we can utilize it and participate more in the world. We can talk about the pros and cons of it today, and then we can talk more about how we can use this to be employed as well for many of you that are looking for employment and using this form of social networking. So, Jesse, you want to say something?
Sure. Okay. Thank you so much, Trish, and thank you, committee. I'm Jesse Lorenz, and I'm the Director of Public Policy at the Lighthouse. I have to correct one thing that Trisha said, and that is that I am not really great at technology. However, I love technology, because I feel like technology is a tool that literally levels the playing field for folks living with vision loss. And I'm a person who is blind, so I like the tools that level my playing field. I want to talk to you today about a revolution. The revolution is social networking and handheld computing. But before we get into all of the specifics of social networking, I want to ask you for some help. As part of my job, I have to keep track of a lot of paper. Paper that needs my signature oftentimes. And sometimes I have things that need my signature that I need to sign right away. It's urgent. But most of the time, things need my signature. It doesn't need to happen the same day. It's usually a time frame is like by the end of the week. Maybe it's an invoice or something, and it's not quite as pressing. So I'd like to talk to you guys in the room and help. I would like you to help me problem solve some solutions for keeping track of paper. I have two different types of paper, things that need immediate attention and things that don't need immediate attention. What are some possible solutions for keeping track of this written paper in my work environment? Just yell it out. You can raise your hand all you want. You're going to be keeping it up for a while.
I like to do Rob Turner. It seems really post-it notes, just Braille on them. You know, the Braille is not very firm. It's good enough for
So Rob uses post-it notes, and he'll braille directly onto post-it notes because the post-it notes can hold braille temporarily. So then you just put that on the different pieces of paper.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Anybody else?
They're soft. They're kind of cardboard files, and they have like 15 file slots. And they're 8x11, and you can label them Monday through Friday.
That's a really good idea, labeling them with the days of the week as well. Who else?
Dave Jackson. I use a plastic file case with Brooks Band so that I know that they're secure. Put the documents that I need. I use two of them. One for incoming and one for outgoing. And I put them in these particular holes in the plastic. You can buy these in the Staples store. They come with an elastic band and tie at the bottom, and they're secure. They won't get away. They won't fly over.
That's a great idea too. Anybody else?
Well, there is technology where you can record vocal messages on a sticker that can go on the paper.
Oh, yeah. What is that machine called? The Vox?
Yeah,
Voxcom. The Voxcom. Oh, my gosh. I have not heard anyone talk about a Voxcom in forever.
Or a barcode scanner.
So you may be wondering why I am making you go through this exercise. You know what? Sometimes I find as a blind adult trying to make it out there in the world of employment, the best resource I have are welcome rehab folks. Welcome. So we just talked about several different options folks use to keep track of print paper in an office. I have to say, I've been doing the print paper thing for my entire life and trying to come up with systems to keep track of it. I learned a couple things to doing that exercise. I'd never thought about using the Voxcom. I'd never thought about using an accordion file folder and labeling the days of the week. What I just did is a live and in-person poll of what I would call my social network. Yeah, all you guys are part of my network. I'm trying to figure out how to keep paper straight in my job. And sometimes, most of the time, the best place for me to check in and to find solutions are through my social networks. You in this room are part of my social network. Now let's take that a little bit further and go into the online realm. So what is all this? Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. How many of you have gotten emails saying, will you be my friend?
Yeah.
Trisha Leitz wants to be my friend. She's always friending me. I'm making this up. She's actually not. Just to be real. We are involved in a revolution. And it's a revolution about how we relate to one another. It used to be in a lifetime you would meet people, they would come in and out of your life, and, you know, how many of us are actually still in contact with, you know, the first girlfriend or boyfriend that you had in high school? Things are shifting these days, and it's actually feasible to remain in contact with almost anyone you've ever met. Now, some people would say, what's the point? Why does one want to be in contact with the first person you dated in high school? Well, I assert that it is through the people you know and the relationships that you nurture that we get jobs. The phrase, it's not what you know, it's who you know, has never been more true. If you look at HR directors within major corporations, HR directors now, according to PC Magazine, don't hire people until they've done a Google search and a Facebook profile search. So that's certainly highlighting you want to be careful what you put online. I think for Facebook specifically, I don't know, there is a way to lock your profile down so that, like, nobody can see your profile. But the reality is, nothing is actually locked down. I think if I give you, like, a cautionary word of advice around social networking is, if you put something online, whether it is something on your Facebook page or a 140-character message on Twitter, which we'll talk a little bit about more later, what you're putting up there is going to follow you forever. And so that can be good and that can be bad. I found with myself, I'm a very active Facebook user. And what do people know about me? They know I can't see, they know I do a lot of disability rights work, and they know that I'm really into sports. My online presence on any of my social networking sites is all about disability rights, the things I do related to sports, and things I find interesting related to blindness. I have made a very conscious effort to... that's who I am. That's when I put things on my... social networking sites, I recognize that I'm marketing myself. I'm marketing myself for the stage I am at right now in my life, but I'm also conscious of the fact that what I'm writing today may be read by my employer three years down the road. So I think it's really important to be conscious about those types of things. The primary difference between Facebook, which is a website that allows you to stay in touch with, well, like we talked about earlier, everyone you've ever met in your entire life. The primary difference between Facebook and Twitter is a microblogging service. So when you post messages to Twitter, you can do it through your cell phone or you can do it online. Your content cannot be more than 140 characters long. Everybody's Twittering, from General Motors, the Ford Company, Starbucks, you know, President Obama. You know, everybody has kind of gotten onto this craze. I think it's really important to remember, if you're going to start social networking, you're going to start Twittering, to actually have a discussion with yourself or with your clients about, how are you putting yourself out there? What are the things that you're good at? What do you want people to remember about Ken Metz? How do you want... Do we want to remember Ken because he was, you know, the wild guy at the party? Is that what Ken wants to put out there? Or does he want to put out a more professional, you know, a different face? I'm picking on you a little bit, Ken, because I know you can take it.
Absolutely. Besides, it's true.
We have pictures.
Yeah.
Properly.
Yeah, please. Lots and lots of descriptive text, please.
Yes.
So, how are these tools changing the way that we relate to one another? Instant access and back and forth conversation. It is no longer acceptable to just say, go to our website and read the brochure. People expect... users expect to have a two-way conversation. This is no longer just a flat, one-dimensional space. The internet has become a place where you expect the instant person-to-person interaction. And I think it's actually very rich and very deep. The exercise that we started off with when I talked about organizing paper in an office, that's actually, I get a lot out of my social networks when I come up against accommodations for myself that I've never had to think about before. I'm training for a marathon right now. I've done tons and tons and tons of sports, but I have never sprinted like on a track, full out, all alone by my little self. And when I wanted to find out how other totally blind people practice sprinting, I went to my social networks. And I got lots and lots of great ideas, just like we got some really interesting ideas about how to label paper earlier today. I want to give you a little demonstration of what you can expect to see when you are looking at Facebook. And I'm using my iPhone, and I'm doing that for a very specific reason, and that is, people are not getting onto these sites generally using a desktop or a laptop computer, because computers and memory and access to the internet using handheld cell phones and handheld PDAs That is the way of the future. I'm holding in my hand a small little device that has more power in it than computers did 5 years ago, right? So the world is changing, and how we interact with the internet is changing, and particularly around social networking. So I'm going to try to do a little demonstration for you.
Unlock button. Unlock. Settings. Double tap phone. Double tap to open.
You guys
mail.
Can hear that?
40. Safari.
Yes, yeah.
Double tap to open. Safari. 8. Google. Cert. Landscape. 8. Tabs. 8. Image. Image. Home.
Okay, so we're going to read some. This is just like the login screen to Facebook. I should already be logged in.
Home. Profile. Friends. Inbox. Jonathan Simon. Heading level 2. Wall. Info. Photos. Write something. Image. Jesse Laura. Image.
Okay,
write
gonna...
photo. Info. Wall. Jonathan's. Inbox. Friends. Profile. Home.
So, actually, let me turn on this.
Profile. Home. Home.
So, if you heard that pop, that means that it's activating a link. And it's going to load up the web page. Can I play what? You know, somebody should invent a Daisy reader for the iPhone because I will tell you, it would be, I would certainly love to have a Daisy reader on the iPhone.
Profile, friend, inbox, Jonathan Wall, John, inbox, friend, profile, home, home.
Okay, come on, load. So,
what program are you using on your iPhone?
I have just Safari. It comes with
profile.
The
profile.
You're just using Safari.
Yeah, I'm just using Safari. There are applications that people use, like TweetDeck or Twitterific or things like that. And what did you say?
I just said Twitter with Roy Rogers.
Friends.
Yeah.
Profile. Profile. Inbox. Jonathan Simon. Wall. John. Inbox. Friends. Profile.
I'm not sure why
home.
This home. Isn't loading up the new page. So when you sign into Facebook, you get to see the most recent status updates of the people that you are friends with. And kind of the rules of the road are that people post things to their status, which can be as inane as, you know.
Profile, friends, in John Wall, info, Wall, John, inbox, friends, profile, profile. Inbox, for utilities, bookmark, forward, back, logout. Facebook copyright to full site, vertical line, mobile site, vertical line, language, inbox, friends, profile. Image.
You guys are very patient.
Image. Home.
I'm sorry.
Home.
It's not loading. It's it seems not to want to load the new page. Yeah, it might be. It might be. So I'm gonna just tell you what I want to do to see. So when you first log in, you see your friends' status updates. That can be information as inane as "I'm thirsty" to yesterday when the president signed the federal hate crimes legislation that includes people who are gay, bisexual, or transgender, and it also includes individuals with disabilities. I changed my status to say, hey, you know, check this out. Here you can link to this. You can click here and see the president sign this hate crimes legislation. So that kind of gives you, the home screen gives you an idea of like what your friends are up to. You can also go to inbox. There's actually a mail client within Facebook. You can send and receive messages to your friends. Pretty easy stuff. Pretty self-explanatory stuff, too. The most important thing to remember is that what you put on that site is never going to go away. I want to talk a little bit about Twitter, and since the phone isn't working, I hope that this is still interesting.
You are.
The wireless in here is really weak.
It's really frustrating, but and AT&T supposedly
landscape.
Has 3G, but
portrait.
It's the supposedly piece of that. So Twitter is a microblogging service. It was invented by
landscape.
A couple of guys who their MSN chat, you know, the chat client, MSN Messenger. They would change their status lines to talk about, you know, what they were doing. I'm you know, working on a report, or I am, I don't know, I'm sitting in the CCB convention. And that's how Twitter was invented. These guys were like, oh, this is kind of fun, like, you know, being telling everybody what I'm doing every minute of the day, you know, this whole online exhibitionism business. And they created a client called Twitter, and Twitter takes those little messages and disperses them to all of your, quote, followers. On Twitter, instead of friends, you follow people. So it works kind of like this. Ken, I'm going to keep picking on you. Okay, good. So if Ken and I are both have Twitter accounts, and my Twitter account is www.twitter.com/JessieLorenz. If Ken wanted to follow my Twitter activities, he would log into his Twitter account, he would search for me, and hit follow. And then every time that I send a Twitter text message, Ken can either log in and see it, or he can configure his account so that my Twitter messages go directly to his cell phone. I'm really not that interesting, so you probably don't want to turn my account on so that it goes to your cell phone. But there are some people's Twitter feeds that are really interesting to go to the cell phone. Like, I really like the New York Times editorial page. I can actually get that to go to my cell phone every time they publish something to the RSS feed on the page, which is kind of cool. It's a really cool way to follow news.
Home. Screen locked. Portrait.
Yeah, that doesn't mean he's loading. That just means it's locking up. in the interest of being transparent, I want to open it up to you guys and talk about social networks and questions you have. It's a little bit tricky because I don't have the ability to do a demonstration for you, but I do know a lot about this stuff, and I would love to open it up to more of a discussion.
Jesse?
Yeah.
Dan Kaiser. I've been trying to figure out the advantages of going to, before I learned the accessibility and go to the tutorials, because I did find a tutorial on Facebook that's available, that's an MP3 tutorial, on Facebook. Are more people going to Facebook or MySpace, and what's the difference between the two?
That's a great question. So Facebook currently has 150 million users. MySpace is the second largest social networking site, and they boast that they have 90 million users. MySpace is used a lot more people in the arts community. They have a lot of applications built into MySpace that allows you to do like music sharing and photo sharing, and in my opinion, it's less accessible because of that. And at the same time, you know, we've got a lot of musicians and a lot of artists, and MySpace is definitely something that if you are an artist, if you are a musician, you should be plugged into.
They also just bought FriendFeed.
Facebook bought FriendFeed, correct.
Teenagers.
Yeah.
Use MySpace.
You know,
adults have sort of migrated over to Facebook.
Teenagers do use MySpace, but the biggest teenager site I learned, actually doing a little research to come and talk to you, is called Tag. The biggest teenager social networking site is Tagged, and I did not go looking around on there, to be honest with you. I thought about it, but other questions, experience with social networking. Artists.
One of my problems is I'm on Facebook and I'm on LinkedIn, and it just takes me so time to check all the messages, make updates, and
I do have some suggestions. First of all, for Facebook, A lot of folks like the mobile site, which is m.facebook.com. I personally have recently discovered something I like even better, which is lite.facebook.com. It changes the order of how things are displayed a little bit, but I actually like it better than the mobile site myself.
How is it different than Facebook?
Oh, hang on here. I got a microphone. We're recording all of this, and it's going to go up on our website for CCB, so we want to make sure that anybody who goes to that website can hear all the questions.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. There you go.
How is Facebook Lite different than Facebook Mobile?
Primary difference is there are no applications in Facebook Lite, so no one is ever going to poke you, try to hug you. Facebook has a lot of applications that the kids love. And they're like, you know, what's your IQ? Send me a cupcake. Send me a hug. You know, all that application stuff, you don't get any of that on Facebook Lite. So I really like that because I don't need any hugs or cupcakes. Particularly when they're only virtual. As far as the issues you brought about LinkedIn and accessibility, I got to tell you guys, this is where there is a big need for more advocacy. I feel like these social networking sites, Twitter initially did not have an accessible CAPTCHA, and it took such a long time, and so many of us had to really put pressure on them to make sure CAPTCHA was accessible. I've experienced what you're just talking about with LinkedIn. There are sometimes links that you think that you should be activating it, but JAWS doesn't activate the link. It's really strange. The main Facebook site has a lot of dynamic content and is not always very user-friendly. As blind folks, what we need, in my opinion, is to be able to blend into society and to be able to take advantage of trends, whether they be technological or not technological, just like everybody else. I mean, really, if you think about it, the Mount Everest of blindness, the mountain that we all are kind of continually climbing, is to be just like everybody else. And I don't mean that in that our blindness is not something that we should take pride in. I mean that we need to be able to access the same tools, use the same platform. I don't think that it's acceptable for Facebook to say, well, we have a mobile site, so you know, you blind people can just use the mobile site. I don't think that that is actually true equal access. So I had to do my little public policy plug. And then one more thing to talk about your question about time. How do you find the time? That is a really great question. And I have found one service that I like quite a bit. It's called Ping, P-I-N-G-F-M. And I think it's pingfm.com or ping.fm.com. And it will actually update all your social networks at once. You can send, you can configure the site so that you either log into PingFM and you send updates, or you can have it, you can configure your cell phone so you just send a text message. So when I was in Beijing, for example, I had a lot of people that wanted to know what was going on when I was over there. I was over there for a month. I just had my cell phone configured so that I could ping. I would send a text message to Ping FM, and then Ping would distribute that message to Twitter, to LinkedIn, to Facebook. So there are things that you can take advantage of in terms of timing. Did that answer all your questions, Artis? Sort of? Okay.
And Jesse, this is Donna. I was going to say, I'm glad that you mentioned that because I couldn't remember what it was called, pingfm.com or ping.fm.com. And I was going to say you can absolutely link all of those, which is a great thing. And I haven't played around as much on Facebook Lite. I just heard about it probably about 3 weeks ago. So I'm glad to hear that you had said it's real easy to get around on.
Yeah, I like
mobile, Facebook mobile, there was still some stuff missing when I go to the regular site and the mobile site. And it sounds like Lite is really, you know, more equivalent, except for those annoying applications that aren't accessible anymore.
Yeah.
Jesse, can we see if there is anybody else?
Yeah,
Jesse, could you explain a little bit the sign-up process and how you get started with these? Is it a difficult type of sign-up, or what would be the process in the Getting Started 101 course?
Facebook.com, and you don't even have to go off their main site to register. Twitter is the same thing. They make it pretty easy to register. However, almost all of these sites are using some form of CAPTCHA. They have audio CAPTCHA, and a lot of them are using ReCAPTCHA, which thank goodness was bought by Google, so hopefully it will get better. However, there are still a lot of CAPTCHAs to get through.
Can I make a suggestion?
Hold on.
One thing about the CAPTCHAs, like I know when you start Facebook, you have to do a CAPTCHA every time you add friends and do a lot of other activities. One thing that you can do to avoid that is by sending a text message to your phone, or if your phone can't text, a friend who can text or something, and then you enter the code and you never have to, that is texted to you, and you never have to do a CAPTCHA again when you add friends. So there's ways to get around some of that.
There's someone back here for artists.
Yeah, raise your hand.
One of the things that you can do when you on Facebook, when you get to those, especially the buttons, like when you want to comment on something that someone said, and you write in the edit field and you write the comment, and then you have to push the comment button. And sometimes with JAWS, it looks like it should be there, but it's not. Right under the edit field, if you do insert escape and refresh the screen, then that button will appear again and you can press
it. That's a really, and then that's really great. Thanks for bringing that up. Who else?
Jesse, this is Robert Wendt. I have a question regarding the actual networking piece, and you mentioned HR, and that is accepting certain friends and the HR person deciding to look at your friends. And then your friends' behavior become information for that HR person. And how do you find that one might handle that from a professional perspective?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think that there are different ways to handle it. For what I do is I actually have my privacy settings. I'm pretty conscious about my privacy settings. On Facebook, you can have people see everything related to you. You can have them see who your friends are, your status updates, when you write on someone else's wall. You can have it completely open, and not only can your friends see that, but anybody who looks at your profile can see what you've been up to. You can also, for example, my mother, who I love. I really don't want my mom seeing my friends, but I don't really mind if she sees any of the rest of it. I just don't want her seeing, like, all kind of what you're saying. I don't need her to see that I have, like, you know, certain friends. And so I have... Wait, forget this is going online. Ken, can you, like, edit some of this out?
Let's see you get out of that.
So I can restrict her privacy settings so she can only see what I want her to see. I also have, the way that I do it is I have lists in Facebook. I have my inner circle, my outer circle, and my family. And I actually adjust my privacy settings accordingly. My outer circle is pretty much everybody. And the only thing that those folks see is when I post something related to sports, disability rights, or a resource about blindness. That's it. www.facebook.com/JesseLorenz. If you are my friend, if you friend me, and I don't know you well, if the only thing you're going to see from me is sports, disability rights, and stuff about blindness, because that's how I'm choosing to market myself. And those are the things I care about. Those are the things that I enjoy, and there's no point in doing this if you're not having fun. More questions? Comments?
I've been on my Braille note trying to get on Facebook or light.facebook.com, and it hates the Braille note.
Well, at least it's not just the iPhone. Next, anyone else? I want to make sure that I feel like the presentation has not gone as smoothly as I wanted, because I really wanted to like jump online. So I really hope that you take with you the following, and that is that our world is changing so rapidly, so quickly. You know, and I don't just mean for blind people. You know, in Iran, there was a disputed election recently, and 3 million people took to the streets to protest the disputed election. The Iranian government shut down BBC, they shut down international text messaging, but they forgot to shut down Twitter. And so those 3 million people living in Iran got to get their story out to the world. The world is changing. It's getting smaller. It's becoming more flat. And that technology that allows someone to do that is a cell phone. You know, we're not talking about, like, you know, only the elite anymore. So if I leave you with nothing else, it is that things are changing, and blind people need to be part of this change.
The question is, you know, there are people that take a lot of different classes in computers, and I mean, there are people who also learn by themselves and can do that. People who have difficulty learning by themselves can go to classes. What do we do then to get classes and specialized processing to learn these things for ourselves? And also, what do you do if you're working? I mean, I thank goodness I'm retired now, but for people who are working, we don't have as many opportunities to get the night classes that other people can get to really get more involved in some of these things. How do you promote getting those types of classes out there?
You know, it's funny. I think that's an interesting question. If you're talking about the larger community of blind folks in need of training, I think it is incumbent upon the agencies and the department to make sure that folks wanting to go back to work are up to speed on these products. However, it's interesting that you mentioned the classes, because what we've found at the Lighthouse is that one way to get some of the some of our older population online is to introduce Facebook and let them connect with their grandkids. So it's an incredible motivator for people in that regard. As far as people who are working, there's actually a lot of stuff online already. If you look at like the Top Tech Tidbits website, you can find links to podcasts and technology-related seminars that talk about how to register for Facebook, how to get on to LinkedIn, etc. In fact, the Lighthouse has an MP3 up on our website that talks about how to register for Facebook. So that's www.lighthouse-sf.org. There's a lot of stuff already out there online. Okay. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes? Big and loud.
Okay, big and loud. I have not done any of this stuff, and I live on a fixed income, and I'm always worried about how much is it going to cost me to do this, to even try to do this.
Do you have an internet connection?
I don't have it on my cell phone because I'm afraid it's going to cost too much.
Do you have one for your computer?
Yes.
Then that's all it's going to cost you.
Okay. Well, I meant for the cell phone.
Well, your cell phone, it's going to depend on your provider, and it's going to depend on if you need to put software on your phone to make it talk. Each provider is a little bit different. I can't answer your question without getting more information and about your cell phone provider and that kind of stuff. There is a cost. It's generally between $20 and $50 for monthly internet access. But if you don't, if you have a computer and you have an internet connection, there's no reason you can't just access these things through your on your PC.
I'm on Facebook, and I don't have a picture up. I'm blind. I don't know how to put pictures up. I think I know a fair amount about technology, but I don't have a picture up. It's an interesting debate, and I wanted to see your take on it. My job developer thinks that if you have Facebook, you should have a picture up.
I agree with your job developer.
Yeah. You know, some of us don't necessarily want other people to see how much our bodies have changed in the last 10 years, but...
Wait. Just let me tell you, you would be acting like everyone else in the world if you used 20-year-old pictures.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about how you upload photos as a blind person.
Sure. So first of all, I have learned the hard way, because one of the first times I posted a photo to my Facebook profile, I posted it so that I was literally turned sideways. Not upside down, you know, sideways. So I have been careful ever since then to make sure that my photo is cropped properly before I post it. And honestly, the only way I've been able to do that is to get sighted help. So we all know about that. Once you have your photo cropped properly, you log into the site, hit click on photos, click on upload photo. Once the photo is uploaded, it'll say, do you want to make this your profile picture? Yeah, check yes. And it's pretty easy, but still, just so that you're really sure that you're not sideways, you should get someone to also double check once you're done. That's a good question.
Jesse?
Yes.
I just wanted to add something about photos. I uploaded a photo, and then later I added more photos. And what they do is they bump them into your photo gallery, and the last one you put up is the one that shows on your profile. So you want to be aware of that.
Right, like your and in your public profile most of the time too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hold on, this question.
Hi, this is Donna. I just wanted to say also, you know, your Facebook page is your page, and it's who you are, and it's so easy to do the photo. The other thing that I know I always want to make sure and do is make sure that it's described, and it's real easy to put in your description of your photo as well. You know, so you could do that. You can do that very easily as well. You know, that's kind of how we educate others about what it does for us.
That's a really great, that's a great comment.
Yeah, it's easy to put in a description as well with your photo.
Other comments? How many of you guys are on social networking sites?
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
How many of you are not?
No.
Really? So why not?
But I will be by next week.
It's fun.
Why not?
No,
time consuming.
It's not as time consuming as you think.
Yeah. It is intimidating. It is intimidating.
Half an hour.
Especially when you think about privacy.
Yeah.
You know, the exactly. What is private and what used to be private? The meaning of privacy is changing.
How do you learn how to do it? I don't know the first thing about how to do it.
Do you know how to use a computer?
Oh, yes.
If you can use a computer and you can get on the internet, you can do the stuff that we're talking about today. I would encourage you to try going to m.facebook.com and trying to register. It's pretty if you can do internet browsing, it's pretty self-explanatory.
I can do internet browsing. I can even shop.
All right. Well,
then,
yeah. It takes time. It takes a commitment. But in the long run, this is where our world is going. You know, when I did some research a few years back, I wanted to find out, you know, in Chicago, the Chicago Lighthouse has a technology line where people can call and ask questions about assistive technology. So I wanted to find out what the top questions were that the Chicago Lighthouse received on their technology line. So here were the top three questions. People wanted to know how to configure their email settings, so the POP and SMTP for their email. Second most asked question were questions about Windows Media Player. And the third question was, how do you post your photo to eHarmony? The online dating site. eHarmony, a social networking site, and its and Compatible Partners, which is the dating website for people interested in same-sex relationships. eHarmony and Compatible Partners have actually worked quite a bit with the blind community to make sure that those websites are accessible. So that's sort of an interesting thing. But it's I always found it really fascinating that that was one of the top three questions that for the Chicago Lighthouse.
And Jesse, people can ask questions even from here because Ray is on WGN in Chicago.
Yeah.
It's www.wgnradio.com. It's 9:30 our time. I believe it's every Wednesday. Is it every Wednesday or once a month?
I think that he's on every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday, yeah, 9:30 for about a half hour. So every Wednesday.
They have a great program.
Yeah.
AM or PM?
AM. Yeah, but on the you will get it here, but you will on your computer. www.wgnradio.com.
That got recorded, right? Did you get into the microphone to say that?
www.wgnradio.com. And the Chicago Lighthouse's technical assistance line is funded by Boeing, and they can provide technical support to anyone who's blind or visually impaired with adaptive technology, and it doesn't matter if you live in California or Chicago. He's really great. I had an Excel calamity, Excel spreadsheet calamity, and he completely walked me through it, and I didn't even have to cry. He's great.
Jesse, I wanted to say something about the commitment about Facebook. It really doesn't have to be a big commitment. You don't have to comment on people's status. You can add or not add anybody that you want. So if you don't want your first boyfriend or girlfriend from high school, you don't have to have them. There's some people who check their Facebook, once an hour, and there's some people who check their Facebook once every 2 months. You can put in as much or as little in it as you like and as you're comfortable with. So it doesn't have to be this daunting, looming thief of your time if you don't want it to be.
Beats the heck out of Classmates.
Yeah. Classmates.com is another online site.
But they charge.
They do charge, and it's actually not nearly as networked in as Facebook.
And in its day.
Yeah, I don't really... The application that's underneath the user interface is not nearly as sophisticated as Facebook's. If there are no other questions, I don't want to keep belaboring. Is that...
You guys, what do you think?
You think you can talk about the survey?
Yeah, I'll do all that, yeah.
All right. I would love to connect with any of you. I'll be anyone's friend who's in this room because you guys gave me some great suggestions about how to keep track of paper. www.facebook.com/JesseLorenz or www.twitter.com/JesseLorenz. And I'm more than willing to talk with anyone about this online. Any help that I can give, I'm happy to do it because I feel like this is such an important thing for blind people to take advantage of.
Well, Jesse, thank you so much. That was fantastic. You're a beautiful speaker. Very, very good. And she was very excited to come here when I asked her, and I was trying to find a speaker, and Jesse was very, very excited and happy to do it with us. So I thought that was really kind of her.
My iPhone will allow me to demonstrate. But
So anyway, we do have a little time here before Jim Armstrong gets up to speak, and I think that's good. That we'll have a little pre-rehab here. Every session that we have with our rehab committee, when we meet at the conventions, we always do a little rehab update. And right now,
Jeff Tom had asked me to announce that there's going to be a survey being done for starting a commission for the blind. It's going to be here at the convention. And we have a person that's going to be at a booth tomorrow, all day tomorrow and Saturday. And she's sitting up here in the front row. She's our intern from Denmark. And this is Cammy. And her last name is R-Y-D-I-N-G. And I'm going to try to say it, Hruding. How was that? Huh? That was good? Okay, say it. Can you speak into the microphone and say it? I'll bring it over to you.
Okay. Yeah, my name is Camilla Brüding, and I'm the intern here in CCB, and I'll be sitting right about the entrance to Salandi, I think, yeah, tomorrow from 9 to 5 and Saturday from 9 to 5 and doing the survey with anybody who wants to do the survey. And we have it in large print and in Braille, and you can talk to me about it. So please come.
The issues are is that if you have any issues with Department of Rehabilitation as it stands with our Division for the Blind, you're welcome to give that information to her. We do want to work on things at the Department of Rehab to improve on things so we make it better for you guys. I just want to tell you something about Cammy. Actually, she's blind herself and came all the way here from Denmark, and she's going to be giving a talk tomorrow about the differences between Denmark and our society and how that all works with blindness and services and all. And so it should be really fascinating. But I really commend her for coming all the way here and just to do the survey. No, no, just.
But you know how to make apples, Kiva? Okay. You're good then.
Okay, so we were just talking about this survey and how we do want to be more proactive at the Department of Rehab. So I know there's some people in the room from rehab. I know that Jan Carmichael is here. You want to stand up, Jan? And also Bennett Kim is here. And I know that Catherine Bales is here. And Jim Armstrong. And if you don't know, Jan is a counselor in Fresno, and Bennett is a counselor in Fresno. And Catherine Bales is our program manager. And Jim Armstrong, as you all may remember, he was the former program manager. He retired. Now he's back with us working on the Title VII program. Who else is here from the Department of Rehab? We went around the room earlier.
Can I introduce the
Certainly, that'd be wonderful.
I'm Catherine Bales, and I'm the District Administrative Program Manager for Blind Field Services. And with us today are Mary Calloway, and she's the rehab supervisor down in the Inland Empire District. I'm trying to see you. You know, I'm visually impaired myself. Here's Ronnie Graff, and she's our rehabilitation specialist and located in, where the heck are you now? Gardena. Okay. She just moves, so I'm trying to keep track. And then Suzanne Medrano is our rehab supervisor, and she's over in our Norwalk office, so covers that area. Carol Gallego, where? Who? To my right?
It's my supervisor. Yay.
Yeah. Carol Gallego is here all the way from Santa Rosa. And then Sonia Peterson is here, and she's from San Diego, my neck of the woods. And anybody else here?
Nellie,
where are you?
Oh,
sorry. Hi.
One of our own here, Nellie.
See. Okay. Well, yeah, I guess you know that. Okay. And Nellie Emerson is here, and she's with our GLAD area. She's over at Culver City.
And
so
Nellie,
we had our management team meeting this morning, and I don't know if Jeff Thomas here and the others, but I wanted to say thank you. They made arrangements for us to be able to have a meeting room here, and it sure was helpful. So we're glad to be here.
Nellie is one of the CCB members for a very long time, just so y'all know. And she's now a supervisor at the Department of Rehab, so it's fantastic.
Trish, you want to announce the committee?
Yes, we are. I got to get to these guys. Now, there's Ed Crespin from our rehab committee, and he's also a counselor down in San Bernardino. And he's going around with the microphone. He's the guy with the microphone getting all you guys. There's also Richard Rueda. Are you in the room, Richard?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I know you had to go do something, you told me a little bit, so he said he'd be back. There's Therese Gardner. Are you out there?
Yes.
Oh, yay, she's excellent. Okay, she's here, wonderful. She's.
Tuolumne County. Oh, thank you. And Mariposa County.
And anyone else here that I'm. Anybody else from our rehab committee present? Oh, Pat LaFrance. Oh, my gosh. She's a retired counselor. She was fantastic. And she's always helping us out still on our rehab committee and trying to help us all be better as just people helping to serve you guys. And then there's Ken Metz from our he's on our committee as well. I think our committee is really I love our committee because it's really about trying to help the consumers and to improve their lives, whatever we can do for them. And, since we all are connected with the Department of Rehab one way or another, you know, we know the inside issues and we want to be more proactive to help you guys to work on them. Sometimes we can't work on them internally. You know, maybe we disagree with things, but we have you guys, an organized entity that can write resolutions and, you know, take things out beyond the Department of Rehab and try to work with the legislature or governor to get things done. And a lot of us agree with you. We may not be able to, you know, help internally with it, but, you know, many of us in our hearts, we agree and we're just grateful for all of you coming together and to be an organized entity to make the changes needed. I know that I ran into Tony Candela at the NFB convention, and I went up to him after he spoke, and I asked him if we could do some more proactive activities inside the Department of Rehab, and he said, okay, and he asked me what some of the issues were, and there's a myriad of things, but there's things that I think we could all agree on. Do you guys all believe that you should have computers if you are in the job development phase of your plan?
Yes. Yes.
Exactly. It's core. But that's not always being done for you guys. I'm not sure, you know, what the excuse would be. You could go to the one-stops. How would that work for you guys?
Most of them aren't accessible.
Exactly. The one-stops are not accessible. What's another alternative resource they might tell you to do?
Go to the library.
Go to the library. What's that like?
Not too much time. You've got jobs at the library.
Exactly. And are you there all day long when they close, too? Yeah. So, you know, sighted people have the ability to apply for jobs all day long. And you guys deserve the same ability. There's a 73% unemployment rate for people who are blind. So we've got to do whatever we can do. And we hope that that's an issue that we're more educated on at the Department of Rehab. How about reader services? Do you guys feel that it's hard to keep a reader if we don't do it in a timely manner to get it set up?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Can't wait the 2 months.
Yeah. No, you can't wait 2 months to get things set up, I know. And sometimes, you know, we're just put in a conundrum of a scenario and we don't know how to help make it better sometimes. And then sometimes you just have to be like me and kind of just start acting out, right?
Yeah.
And just say it and hope that we can make a better day of it all. I've been a very, very, very blessed counselor at the Department of Rehab. I had Jim Armstrong as my first supervisor, who was fantastic, and I wouldn't be where I'm at or have the abilities I have today without him. And also Carol Gallego has been a fantastic supervisor for me also. I've gotten super lucky, and that's not the way for all counselors. Not all people are focused on trying to help the consumer solely. Some people come to the table and say, I just have a heart for the client and I'm going to do whatever I can to help. I wish everybody could do that at the department, but it doesn't always work out that way. And who knows why, you know, it happens to people. What?
Seems like there's a lot of cynicism among some of the counselors at the department.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of belief about clients that they're just trying to
scam the system, but most people don't want to do something.
Mm-hmm. She was just saying that she's there's a person in the audience that was just saying that there's just a feeling among some people that there's cynicism and that, that of counselors toward the consumers and thinking that they're just scamming the system. When in fact, you know what, you guys, we have a lot of issues on the table. We have numerous needs, and quite frankly, they're very expensive. And so it's something that if you are going to work in blind field services, you do got to understand that one.
Tricia?
Yes.
This is Jesse.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I have struggled with as a blind young professional is is keeping track of paper, but also kind of negotiating the help that I need. You know, who do I trust to be a reader that's going to be able to keep information confidential? Who do I trust to do reading that is better at math than I am? When is it appropriate to use technology as a solution? And one of the things that I have discovered, and this is just sort of repeating some of what I said earlier, is that my best resource for these things are other blind people. The more I connect with other people, for me, I like connecting with other blind women who have, you know, have navigated all of these things. And I think that there's sort of a gap. There's like, you can get all of the professional help and have all of the expenditures made so that I have all these great technological tools, but unless you kind of know how to balance your own systems, you know, I think that people are not as successful. And I think I'm bringing it up because it's a conversation I don't think we have nearly enough. That's my comment.
Okay. you know, I just want to say that these are what I'm proposing with Tony Candela basically is that we do have some issues we need to work through at the department. And that, you know, I would love it if we could form a team of counselors from the north and south and supervisors from the north and south at the Department of Rehab to form this team that would come together with Catherine, our program manager, and also Tony Candela. And we'd meet periodically, and we'd bring up the problems about what are the issues and how can we best problem solve them. And we need to do it in a timely manner, of course, and put a timeline to it. But I think that we have to be more proactive and try to give it a whirl, because quite frankly, you know, the fact that they are asking to do a survey for a Commission for the Blind says that, you know, people are restless and not feeling like this is working out as best as they would like it to. And, you know, we're put in a little bit different scenario because, I mean, the poor supervisors supervise all these different districts, and there's all these, we don't have our own clerical staff, so they have to remember all the different rules in each district, and that is a hard job. You know, it would be wonderful if we had our own clerical staff, and we actually wrote a resolution about that for the convention here, and so we're hoping that that gets passed. But, you know, something has to streamline things to make it better, and that the division could be better and even more if we come together to work on things. But they've been putting up with that for a long time, and I have to commend them very, very much. And I also just want to commend them all for being here with us today, because they're really trying to be immersed into the community and really learn from people. And so you guys are great teachers to all of them. And I think it's fantastic that the Department of Rehab has funded them to come here. So I just want to give them all a hand. Okay, Mr. Armstrong, you want to come up to the front? We'll start in. So Mr. Jim Armstrong is coming up to the front. He, as I said before, was a counselor at the Department of Rehab. He was a supervisor, who was mine. He was excellent. Then he became the program manager, which is equivalent to a district administrator. It's a very high position. Then he retired, and now he's back working with us on the Title VII program. And this program has been given a lot more money, and it's a program that helps people that are 55 and older with more independent living needs. And so for you folks out there that are 55 and older, we're going to hand the microphone over to Jim Armstrong, and he's going to tell you all more about it.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay, thank you very much, Tricia. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. Well, it's good afternoon. It's really nice to be up here and to see familiar faces again. I know a lot of people here in the room. Let me start with a little bit about the Older Blind Program. Are all of you kind of familiar with what that is, or do you want me to give you a little description of that? Yeah, I'll describe it a little bit. It's a program that's been in existence for about the last 10 or 15 years, and basically what it is you can all hear me okay? Okay. It's a program where the Department of Rehabilitation acts as a conduit for federal money, which is passed through the states in most instances to give money to community programs who provide services to older blind people. It's a formula program so that every year, each state receives the same amount of money. California receives $3.2 million every year for this program. And some states keep the money internally and have their the counseling staff disperse the money to different programs. But in California, we grant the money out to our community partners. And we currently have 17 different agencies that receive funds under the Older Blind Program. We call it the Title VII Chapter 2 program because it's really under the independent living umbrella. So basically what's happened is that the grant cycle runs for 3 years, so that programs, when they apply for this money, they apply for a 3-year grant cycle, so they only have to write a grant proposal once every 3 years. Well, what's happened currently is that under President Obama, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, we received additional funds for the Older Blind Program. We currently, in California, we've received $3.3 million, and this is all grant money to be giving out to community agencies. So basically, that's why I'm back with the Department of Rehabilitation. Kathy Bales has graciously called me back and asked me if I would kind of work on this program. So I've been back since June. And, you know, basically the Older Blind Program provides services to anyone who has vision loss 55 years of age and older. The rules for the program are fairly general. You only need to have come into a program and state that you have a visual impairment, and basically you're eligible for services. You know, the services basically are fairly general core services, adjustment to blindness, technology services, how to deal with transportation, mobility issues, those kinds of self-advocacy, those kinds of things. So what's happened in California, what I've been doing is basically we've been writing grants to basically give this money out. And currently, this is a very significant week because this is the week when the intent to award the money is finally being issued. As a matter of fact, it's going out today to the programs that applied for it. In California, I mentioned before, we have 17 different programs. 13 of those 17 programs applied for the funds. So those are the 13 programs that are going to be receiving funding under the program. And the way we wrote the grant is that every program throughout the state would receive funding. And each of the programs that wanted some of this, the pot of $3.3 million, submitted funds. Now, we also have some additional ARRA money. We call it ARRA, American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. So you'll hear that term a lot, ARRA. We also have some additional funds for training of professional staff and consumers. Those particular grants have not come out yet. Those proposals haven't come out, but they will be coming out probably within about a week. And those are much smaller. The large grant is for $3.3 million. The two smaller grants are for $60,000 each. So we felt it was much more important to get the other money out on the street as fast as we could. So that's kind of a general overview. The community programs, there are 13 of them. I'm sure most of you are familiar. I don't have a list. I could describe what the 13 programs are. Maybe I should open it up for some discussion about what you would like to know about this so I could kind of meet your needs here.
Raise your hand.
There's a question up here in front, Ed.
My name's Linda Johnson, and I work at Vista Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired in Palo Alto.
Right. Uh-huh.
And my main field I do, I'm a marriage family therapist, and so what I do is I do the they don't want to be called counseling, but I do adjustment to disability with people, and I just really think it's a wonderful, you know, a way to help other people out. And I'm wondering, we just came up with this issue where they told us that we can't use the word counseling, that it's just straight adjustment to disability. And the problem that's happening is that clients are going to their DOR counselor and saying, I'd like to have adjustment to disability counseling. And so then they add in the counseling. And then it's, in some circumstances, it's really causing some problems. And I'm wondering, is this a true fact, or is there a way to make this an easier communication so people get their needs met?
You mean you're talking about a consumer who really needs some counseling, adjustment counseling services?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I guess my first response is, isn't that what a rehab counselor is supposed to be doing?
Right.
That's the core job of a rehab counselor, and that's one of the things I think the department has been trying to do, is to take things, other responsibilities off of the counselor so that they can do that. But
Exactly. Definitely
adjustment to blindness is one of the core services of the Title VII Chapter 2 program. So if Vista was, you're working for Vista?
Yeah.
And Vista is one of the programs who did apply, and you guys are going to be receiving ARRA funds.
Correct.
And some of that funds certainly can be used for adjustment to counseling. I mean, adjustment to blindness or vision loss. Absolutely. There's no problem with that at all.
Yeah. But the problem is that when the client, the consumer, is going to their counselor, their DOR counselor, they're using the word counseling. And then I know I'm just probably nitpicking here, but, you know, and I'm just wondering, and then the counselor is, you know, taking up issue with this. And do we just advise the consumers then just to say adjustment to disability and not add the counselor?
Well, you're coming from the standpoint of a marriage and family counselor?
Well, I'm a counselor. I'm just a counselor there.
Uh-huh.
I'm educated at that level.
It's called personal and social adjustment. That's the service that some of the agencies have. I think then Vista has that, so that's great. And then,
sorry.
No, that's good, but that's a great topic because, you know, those are the sorts of things that we can bring up, you know, internally to be more educated on when people say the word counseling, you know, what they really mean is personal and social adjustment services through the agencies, and that we can implement that. We can pay for that service. They don't call it counseling just because it gets to be, you know, we're not supposed to do therapy under our stuff and all this other stuff. So we call it personal and social adjustment, and we're happy you're doing it. So it helps a lot.
Okay, I've got Ronnie Graff here, who is a rehabilitation specialist. Would like Ronnie to address that question, please?
Okay, sure.
Maybe I can help out here because I did contracts for several years, and I'm also involved in how our services at the department are vendorized and rates established. One of the problems is, and one of the reasons that we would like the service to be addressed as or written as adjustment to blindness is because if you call in our department, and this is we're a bureaucracy, if you call, there is some confusion between ILS services, which include adjustment to blindness, and medical services, which can include counseling, like psychotherapy. And the rates, they're two different services. The rates for them are two different rates. And so sometimes when that service is authorized, the staff, the clerical staff who are authorizing, doing the work as far as issuing the authorization, then some question arises, is this a medical service or is it an ILS service? And is the rate $35 an hour or is the rate $55 an hour? And that's where we're trying to eliminate confusion because adjustment to blindness or adjustment to sensory loss is considered a service under our category of independent living services, and it has a separate code and a separate fee rate assigned, and it's not a medical service.
Mm-hmm. PVSA
that Tricia was referring to, and that certainly is another service, not under Title VII, but it is under fee-for-service at our different agencies, like yours. That is supposed to be training. It is not to be considered counseling or therapy or treatment. It is training for a specific area that requires training for that particular individual. And so an assessment needs to be conducted, and then they need to say, this is what this person needs some training in. And it could be concerning personal needs or vocational. Mm-hmm. That's why it's very structured just for that individual counselor, or consumer, excuse me. Okay? But that is not under the Title VII.
Right. But all of the Title VII programs are hopefully providing that service for our older individuals who are having vision loss. So.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
How do we find out where in my area, I'm in Santa Maria, these services are, what's available for me in my particular area?
Well, the Santa Maria area would be VTC, right? VTC would be the area in Santa Maria. There's an agency right in Santa Maria that that is one of the programs that applied for the extra ARA grant money, and they are going to receive some funding under that. So that's where you would look.
And VTC stands for Vocational Training Center.
Thank you.
Oh, hold on.
Okay, now, did you mention that it could also be for technology training?
Depending on the resources of the program that you're working with, yes.
Okay, so I would have to contact them to find out what would be available for technology training.
Correct, but most of them do offer that, you know, most of them do offer that service.
Hi, Jim, Pat LaFrance.
Hi, Pat.
Hi. I have a question because in some cases you'll have a senior who needs independent living skills training, whatever, in their home, but they don't live anywhere near one of these centers, and they're no longer getting it from what I understand because the counselors aren't being allowed to go out to people's home to do independent living skills training. So what do they do then?
Well, when I wrote the grant, one of the main emphasis of the grant was on outreach to try to reach, and almost all of the people who submitted applications for the ARA funds, we're talking about, you know, serving unserved areas, looking at more rural locations. So the programs are trying to get out there. It's an imperfect system, but it's what we have to work with.
What about providing
transportation
for them to get to the center?
Well, we've done some of that. We have provided, under the ARA, we are providing some vehicles to a couple of different programs that have requested them. They have to request the vehicles. We've done that. I know some of the programs have mobile units out there. It's a problem. I mean, I can't say it's not a problem. You're talking about something that California is a big state, so, yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to make a statement that counselors are going to consumers' homes. They are conducting assessments in the homes. They can do that. Nobody has put a restriction on that. So if that information is out there, I would say please contact the counselor and discuss that, and if necessary, contact the counselor supervisor just to get clarification about that. But there's no restrictions on our counselors going to a consumer's home, and we do have a travel restriction, but our travel restriction is that with approval from the supervisor, the counselor can go out in the field to the agencies and to consumers' homes and to schools and what have you, 2 days a week. And most are not doing that, so they certainly can do that. Suzanne, do you want to say anything else?
Even the travel restrictions, we're asking people just be reasonable, and if you can schedule two or three things in a day, that would be great. And, you know, 2 days a week, we're averaging, you know, requests for about 2 days a week instead of five. But yeah, we haven't said to anybody, at least I don't know that any of us have said to anybody not to go out there and help with equipment. I have counselors that do deliver equipment.
Catherine, I don't know if I misunderstood the question, or I thought the young lady had asked if we as counselors can go to the home to teach the skills such as independent living. And this is Therese. So I don't know if I understood the question correctly, because that's how I interpreted it. Can we as counselors go to the home to teach the skills?
Right.
Therese, if the counselor has the qualifications to do that, then they should do that. Of course they should. And if they need to authorize it through an agency that can go to the home, or through an individual service provider, if that's what's appropriate for that geographic area, then that's what we do. So if the counselor is skilled, and they should be, and are able to provide some basic instruction. We're not O&M instructors. We're people that can, though, do assessments and provide some basic guidance to our consumers. If they require the higher level of instruction, then an individual service provider would be done if we don't have a community resource rehab program in the area. But otherwise, we would use the resources that are best for that individual person. We can still authorize the service to be done.
Jim, this is Ed Crespin. The funding you're talking about, is that strictly for agencies, or is it also including the Department of Voc Rehab? And then secondly, you said there were guidelines, and they're pretty open, pretty loose, if I heard right. But there are guidelines. Could you explain the guidelines a little more clearly?
The guidelines of the Older Blind Program? You know, is that what you wanted to hear about?
Well, I'm kind of with the program that's running now.
Title VII program?
Yes.
Well, the services that they provide is based on what they tell us they're going to provide. You know, they basically, you know, we are the grantee, as the state is the grantee, and they're the sub-grantee. And when the programs want Title VII money, they have to submit a proposal to us, and we have to agree that their proposal, you know, makes sense, that it's something that we can fund. So the programs generally, I mean, we have a set of core services that all the programs tend to follow. So all the programs offer similar services. Some programs are stronger in some areas than others, like the San Francisco Lighthouse, for example, has a deaf-blind program. Other programs don't necessarily have that. The Center for the Partially Sighted has a low-vision clinic, other programs. So the resources are spread around, and you know, there's obviously not enough to go around. What was the first part of your question?
Well, these still the same services that are offered by the Department of Voc Rehab?
Well, I would say that they're more generalized services. You know, I've tried to write some different things to kind of reflect what's going on in the economy today. Like, I tried to encourage the programs to think about seniors who need to go back to work and maybe providing some pre-vocational services. But these programs are not going to be, for the most part, are not going to be purchasing computers for consumers or providing a whole lot of mobility instruction. You know, for that, you're going to have to go to the department. So these are services that are more widely spread out, I could say. You know, not enough to go around really, but we make the best of what we've got.
My question, I don't know if it relates directly to this, but it's something that's come up, is when you talk about vocational people going back to work, is there anybody within the Department of Rehab or the system that is specializes in working with the employers and letting them know what and how to work with a person that is visually impaired, blind? I personally felt that when I lost my eyesight and I got evaluated on what I was going to need in my job, and my employer was given a list several pages long, and the next thing I know, I was being pushed out the door and, oh, you qualify for disability. So, you know, the approach on that is probably somebody needs to know how to work with an employer. Does that exist within the Department of Rehab?
I better let Kathy answer that.
Okay. We have several community rehabilitation programs throughout the state that specialize in services to people that are blind or visually impaired. And many of these programs have a job placement a component to their services. And so they do work with employers. They have job developers. And we, too, provide them with training. That training can always be ongoing. You know how people kind of change jobs. And so we have to make sure on our part as well that training is provided, that the people that are hired at these different agencies do have those kind of skills. It's essential. Ronnie Graff, as a rehab specialist, she's also our employment coordinator for Blind Field Services, so I'm going to pass it over to her.
Well, yes, but in listening to the question, the first thing that popped into my mind, at least in all my years as a rehab counselor, it is the rehabilitation counselor's responsibility to work with their client. If you have someone who comes to you and says, I'm in jeopardy of losing my job, that's what a vocational rehabilitation counselor does. That's one of the core services that we provide, is to help people maintain or obtain employment. So they should be in there, right in there with the employee, working with the employer, and trying to work things out. We may have to call upon the assistance of an agency that provides technical assessment of the work site and that sort of thing, but that's really a responsibility.
Yeah, I just want to say something to follow up. When I was a counselor for 29 years, and I also was a supervisor for 4.5 years, plus the program manager, and I know that in my career, when someone was in danger of losing their job, that was the number one priority on my caseload. I mean, that was like, if you can save someone's job, that's what you, that should be the first thing you try to do, you know. So if counselors are not doing that, you guys should be screaming.
Now, I'll tell you something else. Me and Jesse talk about this all the time, and it's all about, you know, when we go to our employers to ask for technology, our stuff costs $10,000, and that's cheap. You know, and do you think an employer is going to keep you around if they have to pay for it? Yeah. So what should a rehab counselor do? What do you think they should do, Jesse? I'll answer for her first. I'm going to say that they should buy it, right? Because we want to make sure you retain your job. We don't want to see your employer say to you, I think you should just get on disability. So, Jess, I know we talk about this a lot, so.
Survey says buy the technology. But it's also incumbent upon us as blind folks and looking for jobs to learn how to use the technology. I mean, it's completely unreasonable to think that you're going to get any job these days and not have to use a computer. And so you can't walk into a job expecting that that's where you're going to learn how to use email and JAWS and so forth. That said, rehab needs to purchase the technology.
Okay, we got that's yeah, we just go round and round with this issue in the blind community, but I know that me and Jesse have talked about it, and others have talked about it many times, about, you know, that people are in a very dangerous situation when you ask your employer for you know, something that costs $5,000. You know, I need a note taker. Should I keep you around? Are you a great bet for in this economy to keep you around? So that's why we exist, and we're under the Rehab Act to step in and to provide those services without delay. And if we do, we get success stories and 26s, and that's what keeps our funding coming in. So, anyway.
Just as a consumer, though. As a consumer, what kind of recourse do we have when that wasn't, you know, it didn't happen for me? You know, and I lost my job, you know, that type of thing. But And I was dealing with vision loss at the same time. So I was probably dealing with a lot of medical things at the same
time. This is why CCB exists. Because if you don't think that us at the department are helping you, you have to go to, you can call the rehab office at, the CCB office, at 916-441-2100. And you can get an advocate, someone who can assist you. And they can help with your situation. You know, the first thing you would do is try to go up the ladder and see if you could talk to, if the counselor's not going to help you, then you go to the supervisor. And if they don't, then you go to Catherine. And if they don't, you go to Tony Candela. And if that person doesn't, then you go to Luciana. And if that person doesn't do it, go to Tony Sauer. But sometimes you need some support. You can't just be out there on your own. That's why you call the CCB office. And they can help put an advocate in place with you so that, you know, you should be out there working.
My name is Robert Wendt, and two things that I see happening. One is I work at a university as a career counselor. My caseload is just regular students with the exception of some workability for students that I have. One of my biggest problems is I'll have a blind or visually impaired student come to me on a career track that may not be the most appropriate. And then when you explore with the person and try to find out, you know, how they came to this decision, whatever, you find sometimes the student really didn't evaluate themselves. That first step of evaluating and knowing, is this right for me? Is this a good match? Doesn't always get done. So that's one point. Sometimes I'll get people who are already all the way through. They've selected something that's appropriate. And then the second whammy comes, and that's that social adjustment piece to employment. So the person may get on the job, but then they have social skills that are lacking, and what resources are available for both of those issues.
Jim, do you want to answer this? Because this is not quite your title.
Yeah, I think
program.
I'll throw it back to
Catherine.
Back to the rehab people.
Or one of the team here.
I guess I just want to say that our counseling staff and our supervisors, we really want to help our consumers to acquire the skills that they need. We want to work with the agencies that refer them to us, whether it be schools, transition students. We want to try to assess what are the most effective services for all of our consumers. All of our services are individualized, though, and I think that needs to be stressed. Each person, we really have to evaluate what their needs are and how they're going to use, whether it be equipment or training or what have you, how are they going to use that equipment or training of equipment? Is it going to be relevant for their needs? Counselors really need to be active in each case. And that means, just as Ronnie said and others have said, they must be able to work with the employers. They must be able to work effectively with those consumers on their particular needs. There's so many individualized needs. And I can't stress enough that it is our goal to strive towards independence and employment for our consumers, where that's appropriate. And I really want to commend, there's a lot of rehab counselors in this room, and we've heard who they are, and I am so proud of every one of them. They really do try their very best to provide quality services to our consumers. There's always going to be a situation that may not be getting resolved as quickly as we'd like. And we don't like that either. And I've dealt with some of those kind of situations. But Ed Crespin and Jan and Tricia and Therese and Bennett Kim and all of the others that are in the room, I just commend them. They're here. They're being active. They're being proactive with their clients. And that's what I want to see. And I want to put a plug in right here. If any of you are consumers or want to be a consumer someday, and you're interested in being a rehabilitation counselor, it is the best profession you could ever get into. I've been with the Department of Rehab for almost 23 years now, and some of the others that are here have been even longer. And it has been the best profession I could have ever wanted to be in. It takes a lot of work, a lot of study, but you get to see such a difference being made in the lives of the people that you are working with and serving. There's 70% of people that are blind or visually impaired are unemployed who want to work. And we are really charged to help those people to get the services that they need to go to work. And sometimes we're going to have to say no to some things, okay? That just might be the case. Just like you go somewhere else and just out in the community, there may be a reason that it's going to say no. But we need to make sure that we are working with our consumers, working with employers, working with our agencies, working with our partners to provide the best quality services that we possibly can to help them go to work and gain independence.
I want to add to that, this is Ed Crespin, that if you are working with Disabled Student Services in the office, Workability 3, Workability 4, and if you are finding that you have a consumer that's Department of Voc Rehab and that person is struggling, please, and this is for the folks out there, not just in this room, please contact the rehab counselor, because we are interested in their future, and if they're struggling and if they're not in the right educational plan, it's not going to match the vocational plan. That doesn't help us. So we need to get together and talk. I'll be glad to always meet with my consumers. So
no,
make sure you, those who are out there, if you have a consumer who's struggling, have them talk to the counselor at the school. Join it together with the counselor with Department of Voc Rehab.
Ed, you just took the words right out of my mouth.
Kelly
you.
Hill.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Kelly Hill. I help provide services in the rehabilitation technology area in the Inland Empire. And I want to be very candid about a problem that I see, not with Title VII, but with fee-for-service. When I'm working with a consumer providing direct training, my agency gets paid. When I'm having a staffing with my client and their rehabilitation counselor, my agency does not get paid under fee-for-service. And I think this is becoming a problem because, you know, of course, we're gonna do the things that pay us as an agency. And but what we really need to do is have a way to get a little bit of money, at least, when we're having staffings and meetings with the counselors and things like that, so we can all stay on the same page. Those things are really very helpful. And the second issue I see is that I get a lot of consumers who come in, and to me they appear to say all the right things. Oh yes, I want to go back to work. Oh yes, I want to do this. Oh yes, I'll do that. But what they really just want some training and some, maybe some equipment or whatever. But they have to say that they're ready to go to work and they want to go to work in order to get any kind of services. And I think that, you know, there are some of them that don't really feel that way in their hearts, but they say it because that's the only way that they can get the training. And so ever since we lost the kind of the counselor teacher positions, I get a lot of people who are on a career track who are socially and not ready, and who have other issues than blindness, who have things like processing issues, people who cannot look at a web page and take it in and then come back the next day and still understand how to do it. And their counselors don't always know this or appear to know this about them. Or if they do, they're not in a position, you know, to do anything about it. And I think that we really, really need a lot of focus on the adjustment to blindness, because a lot of the people that I work with are recently blinded, thrown into a career track, and not at all ready for it.
Yeah.
values? Anybody want to say something to that?
Well, the only thing I would say to the first part of the question, it would be nice if we could pay people. Most, are you assuming that most community programs are, their staff are on billable hours? Because I've never encountered that. I mean, they're mostly, most people receive salaries, so I don't quite understand why they wouldn't have time to talk to a rehab counselor. I'm a little bit unclear about that aspect of your question.
Let's have Ronnie answer that question, maybe.
I believe Kelly was probably speaking on behalf of the agency he works for, and there has always been and there continues to be concern about the fact that our community rehab programs receive a certain fee for service for hours of service provided. But if you're not providing the direct service, if you're having a staffing or doing paperwork or things like that related to your services, those are not billable hours. The agency can't bill for that part of the service. However, the rates, the DOR rates are established taking into consideration administrative costs and indirect types of costs, things of that nature. So you, as a staff person, may not realize that, but whatever rate your agency receives, those kinds of things are built into the rate.
I just was thinking about what he was saying about the second part, and I know we get funding from RSA, like 78% of our funding to help you guys is through Rehab Services Administration, it's a federal entity. So they want us to make sure that we're spending it on vocational outcomes and people going to work. We've always said that in California that the homemaker plan is a vocational track plan. Now, there's been some controversy with all of that from RSA and our agency. And I remember at our training in last spring, I was really happy when Tony Gandela said, you know, until we, you know, have another program that can help older people, we'll just make them a homemaker. And we know it's really important that we try to encourage people as much as we can about going to work, because a lot of times people don't believe that we could ever go to work. But you're right, you know, things get confusing and some people are just not on that track. They have other disability issues that are going to prevent them maybe from going to work. And how do we go ahead, and maybe they're only 40 years old. And it's like you should say to them, of course you should go to work. You're too young. But at the same time, we have to be really sensitive that this person may be actually a homemaker, possibly. And we don't want to misdiagnose the scenario, but I think that, you know, I think the department's getting better. I just things that have been going on internally, I just feel like it's okay. It's okay to make that judgment and to say this is really a homemaker track for this person. And it's okay, because they need help too. They need a CCTV, or they need, you know, what they need to live independently. And, you know, we should just go ahead and set them up as a homemaker. But, you know, that's our shtick, is to try to make sure that we give them all the, that we talk to them about being vocational, putting them on that track. And we're thinking during that time we're giving them opportunity, maybe harmful to them, possibly. But, you know, we can always change it into a homemaker plan if we find that out too. So, okay.
This is Christy Creston. One of the things that I would like to address is, again, going back to the adjustment and the social skills. I have noticed that there are people who sound really good and they play a good game, but when they really have to jump into the job, they can't do it. And there needs to be some way of assessing people's abilities, because what happens is then the employer says, I'm not hiring another blind person, not after so-and-so. I've witnessed it where I work, and I've witnessed it in being an officer of the council where you think that one of your members is able to do something and then you find out, oops, that person can't do what you thought that person could do. So what is possible for the counselor to be able to make sure that it's a good fit both emotionally / socially and vocational wise in terms of the person being able to conduct the business of the job?
I can take that question, but it's not a older OIB question since we're not dealing with employment primarily. So, you know, the only thing I would say is that you know, we have a network of rehab counselors, and I think you all know that there are different, the counselors have different abilities, and you know, we're dealing with so many different consumers. You know, it's just, I don't see how you're going to address that problem in any kind of a global way. You know, that's why people get master's degrees in counseling, so that they can begin to understand those kinds of issues. You know, those are complicated issues. You know, how do you know when someone's ready to go to work? You know, one thing I would say is that we work with our consumers for a long time, so the counselor knows that consumer pretty well. You know, usually, you know, they're on our caseloads for quite some time, so we should know them very, very well by the time we get to job placement. You know, so. I don't know, maybe other people have other things they want to add. Ken Metz. Hey, Ken.
Hey, my friend. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I still remember his birthday, June 28th. So anyway.
Oh, my God. I can't believe you.
Yeah. That's why you can do those things when you retire.
That's awesome. That's awesome, Ken.
You know, some of the problems I've seen, and I think I've mentioned this in the past, and I see where there are folks who are counselors who have their bachelor's and master's degrees and still are inept at doing a lot of the services. And fortunately, I'm not speaking of a lot of them, but the point is some of the clients still get those counselors. And is there any way, and is it even permissible by the civil service code to do practicums with some of them? We all know in the past we've had counselors that signed up to be homemaker, or in the old case, the old CTs, who didn't know how to make a bed. I mean, and you know, we know this has happened, all of us. And we know there are counselors that maybe said they could teach Braille, but maybe no grade one, and the person's already passed that. We know counselors that used to go to the homes, they're supposed to be able to teach to cook, but all they can say is, well, I'll teach you how to use a microwave because it's safer. Blind people shouldn't use a gas stove. But this has happened. We can laugh at it. But unfortunately, it's also not a funny matter in the sense that these things have happened, and I'm sure they still do on occasion. Can we do practicums to make certain that these people are going to be good counselors? You know, what you learn out of a book in college is one thing. Mm-hmm. When you're dealing with human life, mm-hmm. and human experience and human needs, it's a whole different ballgame.
This is Ed Cressman. Maybe I can answer some of that. Possibly, if you're a new counselor coming into the system, you go to the different training centers and you participate in their programs. I know you go to OCB and you spend at least 3 days there, 4 days, and you can go to the Living Skills Center. But what we could do maybe to have a renewal for those who are needing that to go back maybe after so many years that they can go back and get that training again. Maybe they need a refresher too.
Maybe they need to go before they become a counselor.
One thing that we really like to do is bring people on as interns during the last semester of getting their master's degree. And through that, we can provide them with some training, and we can introduce them to what Department of Rehab Blind Field Services is all about, at least give them some information and see if this is a good fit for them. You know, during that initial year, they really do need to get some hands-on training and work with a mentor, work with another counselor that is seasoned, that is a veteran, I didn't say old,
Thank you.
I didn't. And who can, they can shadow. And, you know, because a person getting a master's degree in rehabilitation counseling, they may not have all those skills as being, you know, teaching people homemaker skills. That they may not be that skilled in that area, but they can learn, and they can work with the programs that we can refer our consumers to as well, such as the Davidson program and the Living Skills and OCB and what have you, to gain additional skills. So I agree with you wholeheartedly, Ken, that we need to make sure that our counselors are trained and that they do have the skills to work with the consumers.
You know, what I would say, Ken, though, is that, you know, counselors, you know, they've got a very complicated job. And, you know, one of the things that I, when I was program manager, one of the mistakes that I made was thinking that I should be hiring people who are blind or visually impaired as counselors for blind field services. And after a while, I moved off of that because that's not the most important factor. This is the job of a voc rehab counselor is an incredibly difficult job. It's the most difficult job in all the Department of Rehabilitation, in my opinion. And, you know, it's, to me, it's more important that they understand the importance of those skills than that they actually have the ability to teach them, because they can always find somebody to teach them. But as long as they understand how important it is that they have those skills.
I'm curious about one thing. I've dealt with several rehab counselors over the years. I also work in the medical field. Are rehab counselors required to do continuing education? In the years that we've gone to manual typewriters to the computer age. Now, if someone started 25, 30 years ago, have they gone back to school and get all those skills that they can get to know what they're talking about? Do they have continuing education?
Yeah, the governor just signed the, what is it called? Does anyone?
Licensure.
The licensure, yeah. So that's going to start happening. That's actually going to start happening now. Yeah.
I'd like to just make one suggestion, because what you said, it occurred to me how these counselors, especially in the area of vocational, are working with all fields. Somebody said they're in the medical. My background was in education. Somebody else might be in a business. I think this might be a good place where, when I look at the membership of CCB, you have people of all walks of life. There are probably people out there who are blind and in vocations. I think it would be a valuable thing to branch, and when you talk about mentors, that you also find mentors that are of that profession that person is trying to be trained in, to work together at. I know just in the area of teaching, there's a beginning teacher program that there's a mentor teacher that's with a teacher for 2 years, their first 2 years of teaching. My daughter works in a federal job right now, and she struggled this last year. She wished she had somebody, and she's not visually impaired. And I know for any new teacher, it's a difficult thing, you know, as I'm just relating to my own profession, and having a mentor that knows what's supposed to happen during the year to help them through this, having somebody that also knows what it's like, you know, to be blind and have to do this, because it's adding another layer of difficulty to that year, might be something to explore as far as making lists of people in different areas throughout the state who could act as mentors and added help for these resources, as an added resource for the counselors that are out there.
Okay, hold on.
You guys kind of said that all this takes place in the final semester or the final year of the master's program. And to me, it seems like if I was in my final year of my final semester of my master's program doing my internship, and I discovered that, hey, this really wasn't going to work for me, it would be a little too late to change my mind. Well, that's true. I'm just wondering. Is that a student?
The internship, really, the graduate student assistance or the intern, that's when the school can set up that arrangement with probably have another agency.
But it's our responsibility if we see that they don't function well when they're an intern.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Believe you me, it is noted, and they may not be invited to interview for positions. So, yeah, that is our responsibility, that portion of it.
Just because somebody has an internship does not mean that they're going to be hired. It gives them an opportunity to be exposed to the Department of Rehab and what our responsibilities are. But then they have to perform to
it.
I actually counseled an intern at one point and said, you know, sat down and said, are you sure this is right for you? This is where you want to be? Because you're not really doing well in this internship. And I this was 20 years ago. I've been with the department 30 years ago. And she actually moved on to something else. And that was probably the best thing that could have happened for her.
We have a question over here.
It's really not a question, it's Robert Wendt again. It's really a follow-up to the first part of my initial statement, and that is the original career exploration. Not one of the clients that I have that are DR clients has been tested from a career perspective. There's no strong interest inventory, no SDS, no COPS. There is nothing in their files to indicate any of that exploration was done at the beginning of the process.
Well, I don't think that's unusual. I would really question how effective those tools really are. I never use tools like that. If a consumer wanted interest testing, I'd be happy to give it to them. But I certainly didn't require them to take it.
Agreed.
You know, I really question the value of those kinds of instruments, especially for someone who's got a serious visual impairment. You know. Yeah, we're moving. As a matter of fact, I question the whole value of psychological testing in general.
So then you get into the problems that we're talking about right now.
Well, the best way to try something is to let people try it out.
Yeah.
You know, let them try it. You know, they'll find out.
And testing is the solution, but the career piece that's done initially that helps that person appropriately explore given the nature of their disability and their individual needs.
Yeah.
That would be a good time to set up an appointment with a counselor and the student and sit down and say, hey, look, we have this opportunity to really see where you want to go.
Yeah, that's why we don't use them. Right.
Actually, yeah,
right.
Several of them are accessible now.
Well, yeah, but
I
don't think they've ever have they ever been studied in terms of this particular population.
Yes, actually, they have.
Yeah. Well, you may know more than I do. I don't know.
Hi, this is Jessie again. I took an inventory of career choices when I was like 17, and it recommended that I go into fire science.
Right. Right.
So.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Not the inventory alone, it's the counseling that goes.
Well, right. And you're getting on the right track now, yeah. It's one tool.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, then I agree with you, yeah.
Well, I did have a question, though. I have come and talked to this group before about technology procurement when people actually get a job offer. And I feel like that's actually gotten better in the past, I would say, 18 to 24 months, that process. But what I've seen a lot of, particularly in the last year, are folks at the community college level who have very little to no functional vision and don't have access to a PC at home. So I'm just wondering, if I see someone, I'm working with someone who is having to go out to a library or a lab, or we are fortunate to have an accessible one-stop with some assistive technology, are those folks that I should be, what are my steps in terms of, I feel like this person actually would benefit from a PC at home?
I'll deflect that back to the rehab people. I'm older blind, so.
I can answer if you want me to. Okay. If that person is in a plan with me and they're at a community college and they're moving toward a vocational goal, absolutely. They're going to have a computer to read and write with. I mean, there may be some other scenarios I don't understand about the situation, but when people are in school, we do help them with a computer so they can read and write so they can get through their schooling. So,
But just if there's some problems, just always give me a call too, and I can also kind of just give me the general aspects of it, and I can kind of talk you through it a little more too about, yeah, that seems right, or I don't know, but you know. Okay.
This is Ed Crespin. I wanted to talk about the employment and assessments. There is a very simple assessment tool that you could use if you have a computer. That's a problem, though, but that could be resolved. But you can go to CaliforniaCareerZone.org, and I tell my folks to go there because it really is a pretty simple assessment tool, and it doesn't answer your question. There's no tool out there that's going to tell you what you're going to be 20 years from now.
Right.
So it's but it's good to have that tool and go through it and think about it. That's the whole thing. You don't want to jump into a vocational goal just because. And you don't want to jump into college just because. And I've known people who've gone to college and have changed their minds. But that's okay, because then they have changed maybe their thoughts about what they were going to major in and how they were going to complete the vocational goal. But the thing is, if you're going to go to college or if you're going to try to find work, find out what tools are out there to research. You can go to AFB.org and connect with other people to find out who does this job. If you isolate yourself, you're not going to get a job and you're going to flounder.
This is Christy again. Jim, I want to bring this back to you, and I guess I want to understand a little bit more what programs, I guess, that you're working on or working on the funding for. What are the qualifications of the people that can benefit from the project that you're doing right now?
Who can benefit from it?
Who can benefit, and how do they get involved?
Well, it's a program that basically is open. It's probably not as publicized as it should be, but it's a program that's for people who are 55 years of age who basically self-declare that they have a disability, that they have a vision disability. There's no visual acuity test or any medical documentation required. You know, if you come in and say, I have a problem, then the program is supposed to serve you. So, you know, the program, all of the programs hopefully do a certain amount of outreach. They go to senior centers, they go to, you know, churches, to optometrists, wherever, you know, the trail leads them to try to advertise the program. You know, what the services that are offered. Am I answering your question, Christy? Yeah.
People that are in the community that I know that have been asking things.
Yeah, if you're looking for someone to go out and buy you a bunch of stuff, this is not a good place to look. I mean, that most of these programs don't have the funding to go out and buy a senior a computer or a, you know, something like that. You know, they're more involved with services that they can provide over a period of time, adjustment services, you know, helping you how you're going to get around, introducing you to technology, you know, those kinds of things. But each of the programs has their own emphasis on what they specialize in, you know, so they're all different.
Is there information on the website about this particular?
Yes, we have a link on the department's website, dor.ca.gov. You can go to the website and you can go to it. What is it called, Catherine? Is it the older blind?
OIB.
OIB, older individuals who are blind, the OIB program. It's also referred to as Title VII, Chapter 2. Title VII, Chapter 2. That's the right. Right. This whole program falls under the independent living umbrella, not under the vocational umbrella. Right.
We just started a new center in Merced. How can a new center get any of this money? Because we're just running on private donations right now.
Oh. Well, for this grant site, you would be eligible to participate in the next grant cycle. This cycle is already over, so it just closed. So this cycle is over. But there'll be another cycle starting next. Is it October, Catherine, that the OIB?
I would have to check.
Yeah, we're in the third. The OIB cycle runs in 3 years, I think, as I said before. We're in the third year now. So next.
How would she get involved with creating the RFP? Who should she contact?
Well, you can contact me.
Yeah.
You can contact Catherine.
Right.
We would, you know. You also can talk to your local office. Grace, who covers Merced? That would be Grace. There's who you can, where's the, there you go. And those are all great contacts. Yeah, that's who you want to talk to, especially Rudy Maynard.
Okay.
Rudy Maynard is our program person out in the field, so he's the one.
It came out that it was more of a fee-for-service thing, he told us.
Yeah, but he doesn't know a lot about the older blind program, so you probably need to talk to somebody in blind field services. Yeah.
Give me a call.
Give Catherine a call. Yeah.
Hi, I am a consumer of department rehab, and I was a little unsettled about the job retention question. Even if you provide all the tools, and I heard someone say, talk to your counselor, if that doesn't work, go up and up and up, and then if that doesn't work, contact CCB regarding an advocate. Do you have to go up the whole chain?
Yeah, I think it.
Or can you go direct?
Because that was me.
Okay. Well, the reason I'm asking is because my personal situation, I was working at a state job. My vision, I lost my vision. I've gone through the steps of the training, getting the equipment, but I have no voice regarding my job. I need an advocate. And it seems like I hear from my counselor, well, I've got a large workload, you know, I've got this, I've got that. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But as a consumer, I would like to protect the investment that the state has made in me and go back to work.
I'm going to talk to you more right after this to make sure I get all the facts on your situation. Could be more in detail. But what I'm saying just generally to the audience is that, you know, it's good to have somebody on your side when there's a problem. And our committee started a mentorship program so that you could contact the CCB office when you're having a problem. And they would put you in contact with a mentor. And, you could just mention my name. You could say Tricia Leeds to them and to that you needed a mentor. And they would contact me. And then I would call Ken Metz or Pat LaFrance, somebody that you could be connected to that would help you walk through the process. And they're very appropriate people. They would say, you know, let's first work with the counselor, then let's work with the supervisor. And if there's other issues that they would work with you in a way like, well, what do you need to have done with the employer? And maybe that's the counselor that needs to get in there and do that. So they'll help with you and figure out what's what, too. But I'm going to talk to you after today, too, just individually, just to make sure you're getting all the right supports.
That's actually a good point because, you know, when she stated that, it really, really gripes me when I hear a counselor, well, you know, we're really overloaded. That is not the consumer's problem. I'm sorry. I don't believe that the consumer needs to really deal with the fact that the counselor's overloaded and therefore they're not important enough to take care of them or to help them. If they're going to be in an advocacy organization such as this, yeah, they're going to hear that around here. But I think when it comes to the counselor saying that in an office, I think it's totally inappropriate.
I agree with you.
I agree with you, Ken.
I agree with you.
The consumer doesn't need to hear the counselor's problems. Right.
And these are the things that, you know, this is why we want to be more proactive just internally. So if someone has a caseload that's 140, obviously they're not going to be able to help you. You know, that's just too many. And that's a strong topic, too, because how many are just dead wood? But, you know, we've got to try to balance out some of the caseloads, I think, too, to help make sure that we're really serving people appropriately. You know, it's just one comment. And then you're right. You know, counselors, we're here to serve you. And if we have a problem with things, it shouldn't be us putting it upon you. We should go to our superiors and then let them know that this is really getting tough. And in fact, we actually wrote another resolution. We're being
furloughed 3 days a month, and that makes it even harder for us to serve people. And Social Security Administration has implemented a case in the Alameda courts right now where they actually put a statement in. A third party is actually doing this lawsuit. But basically they're saying that the disability evaluators that work for the state, they're not able to get their jobs done, and therefore people are not getting their Social Security benefits in a timely manner. Well, for us, our folks can go homeless if we're not around. And, you know, we have very serious jobs, actually. And, and we need to take them very seriously. But that's just, one resolution. I know that, you guys don't know all the resolutions that are coming up, but that is one of them, and that is a important topic. We need to be responsible.
Well, I'll turn it back over to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. This is it. Okay, thanks, everybody, coming from the Department of Rehab. Actually, that was fantastic. And this sort of conversation and discussion that can go on really helps us become better, and just really helps the consumers as well that come to the conventions. And, we're here with you guys. That's what we want to know, too. We're here with you. We are listening. And the people in this room, we all want to be good for you and become even better. So just appreciate everybody coming.